The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
All right, well, just last year, my wife and I went on a date night and we went to Newtown. And we went to one of these trendy bars that everyone knows of. It's just a hole in the wall. There's no signage, but everyone knows it's there. And then when we got there, there was a long line of uni students waiting to go in. And they were checking everyone's ID. It didn't matter how old or how young you look, you got ID'd. And so my wife and I joined the end of the line, and we slowly waited, and we had our IDs out. And then when we got to the front of the line, the bouncer looked at us, and he just waved us in. He didn't even check our IDs. And we thought, oh, ouch, at least pretend you need to check our IDs. But here, my wife and I were thinking how young and trendy and hip we were when we weren't. And often we can be wrong about ourselves. Our self-assessment can be wrong. You know, the NRMA does surveys of drivers, and they found that every driver rates themselves as an above average driver. And by definition, that cannot happen, because half of us have to, by definition, be below average drivers. And yet somehow we all rate ourselves as above average drivers. So we can often be wrong in our self-assessment. So what if we're not the good people that we think we are? So today's talk is how not to be the next headline, how to make sure we are good people. So once again, my name is Sam. I'm married to Steph. I have three young boys. I used to teach ethics in a Bible college, and I also work as a doctor one day a week. Doctors aren't known for being ethical, so in some sense, I'm the least qualified guy to talk here on ethics. But here we go. The Enron company. This was the poster child of the early 2000s, but then we found out they were lying about their assets, they were lying about their profits, and they were lying about their losses. And then the company collapsed, billions of dollars were lost, and people lost their jobs, and even some people ended up in jail. Barclays Bank. It was only found out a few years ago that they were lying and fixing the LIDOR index. And again, a great scandal happened in the English banking system. Wells Fargo, just last year, one of the top three banks of the US, they found out they too were creating thousands and thousands of fake sham accounts in customers' names who didn't even know these accounts had existed in their name. And again, managers lost their job and a great banking scandal happened. So how can we make sure we're not the next headline? We have a family friend who works at a bank. And it was found out recently he'd been skimming some money on the side to pay off some debts, and he's now in jail. So these scandals can happen at a corporate level and an individual level. So once again, how can we make sure we are the good people we think we are? How can we not be the next headline? So we're going to have a crash course in ethics this morning, and we're going to look at four systems, four theories of ethics, which try to help us be good people. I think the first three are okay, but the fourth system is the best system. So let's have a look at the first system. The first system of ethics is what we call the code of ethics. So how can we be good people? Well, according to codes of ethics, we have laws, we have principles, we have commands to follow. And if we follow these laws, these principles, these commands, then we will have done the right thing. And this happens at every level of society. So at home, we have a code of ethics. The person who did not cook washes up. In the car, the driver gets to choose the music. Last one to shower must squidgy. And if you use up the last piece of toilet paper, you need to change the roll of toilet paper. Society also has codes of ethics. No smoking, no drink driving, no littering. And professions have codes of ethics. So this is a big thing in professions. So as a doctor, in our code of ethics, you cannot take gifts from pharmaceutical drug company reps. They can't pay for your dinner, they can't pay for your holiday, and they certainly can't even give you a pen. And you think, gosh, it's just a pen, yes, but your code of ethics says you cannot take anything, no gift, not even a pen, from a pharmaceutical sales rep. So this system of ethics, as you know, is called deontology. We can trace it back to Immanuel Kant. And at the corporate level, we create these pages and pages of codes of ethics, thinking that this will get us doing the right thing. Now, there are a few problems with using codes of ethics to do the right thing. So one problem is this. I call it the traffic light problem. So for this to work, we need a bit of audience participation. So let's say you're driving along and you see a red traffic light. Just who here would stop? Who here would stop? All right, everyone, 100% compliance. Everyone here would stop. And if I was to ask you why, most of you, our first knee-jerk reaction would be, it's the law. It's the law. That's why I have to stop at a red light. Now, let's say it's 2 o'clock in the morning. There are no police, no cameras, no traffic, no one's going to get hurt, and the traffic light is red. Who here would still stop? All right, because it's the law. It's the law. All right, doesn't matter there are no police, doesn't matter there are no cars. All right, I'm stopping. It's the law. Let's say it's 2 o'clock in the morning, no police, no cameras, you're not going to get caught, no traffic, there are going to be no accidents, and the light's been red for 20 minutes. Who here would go? All right, look at that, we all go. At this stage, somehow we would go because the wise thing to do is to break the law at this moment. Only a schmuck would still be sitting there at a red traffic light for 20 minutes. So the wise thing to do is to break the law. So laws cannot apply in each and every circumstance. There's a second problem, and I call it the toilet roll law. So what happens in our house is this. You try to use the second last piece of toilet paper, so the next person has to come and change the toilet roll. So the problem with laws is this. We try to do the least bit possible to stay lawful. And there's a third problem, and I call it the iPad problem. So in our family, we had this law, we had this code of ethic, that iPads could only be used on weekends. So they could not be used weekdays, only on weekends. And then so suddenly, Friday afternoon, because the weekend has sort of technically started, our boys, bang, are on their devices, and they're on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're just on their devices for the whole weekend. And suddenly they don't want to go to other things. We say, hey, let's go to the zoo. No, 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 this is iPad time. We've got a family dinner. No, 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 this is iPad time. They're just binging and binging and binging. Then at midnight on Sunday, they are crying. Like, no more iPad, the weekend's over, no more iPad. So then we had to have a timeout, family timeout. So boys, this is not working. What is the intent of the iPad law? It's to minimize iPad usage, and it's had the opposite unintended consequence. You guys are now binging on the iPad because of this rule. So rules have this funny effect on human nature. We try to see how much we can do, how much we can get away with, and still stay within the law. So now you get these funny things happening where you might start saying, okay, the limit is 0.05, so how much can I drink and still stay under 0.05? One drink, two drinks, two and a half drinks? And then, no, no, the intent of the law was to minimize drinking, and now we're trying to see how much we can drink and still stay under the law. I went to Peru, and I noticed in Peru, all the houses seem to be unfinished. Like, you'd have these three-story houses where the first two stories were finished, but the third story was unfinished. And someone explained to me, yes, because once you finish the house, you got to pay the house tax. So then you always make sure there's a third unfinished floor on the house. I remember in Amsterdam seeing all these buildings with no windows. And someone said, yeah, because in the 1600s there was a window tax. So now you just build buildings without windows. So we're all trying to see how much we can do and get away with it. So you might even make a promise at your wedding that I'll be faithful to my wife. And now you start thinking, well, what does that mean? Can I flirt with a secretary? Can I text someone else? Is that still being faithful to my wife? So now you're trying to see how much you can do and get away with it, and you're going against the intention of the law. So then now we have a second system of ethics. It looks at consequences then. We now say, well, it's not so much the law, it's the result. A good result, a good consequence means it's a good action. A bad result, a bad consequence means it's a bad action. So why are there no ball games in the house? Because there'll be a bad consequence. We will break things. Why do we stop at red traffic lights? Because there'll be a bad consequence if we go through a red traffic light. Why do I not take a pen from a sales rep? Because now they own me. In some sense, I'll be obligated to them. I might over-prescribe a medication that my patients don't need. That is a bad consequence. So this system of ethics, as you know, is called consequentialism. It comes from John Stuart Mill, and an example is utilitarianism, summed up by the axiom, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And we use this in business. A leader of a major bank said, we need to be honest. Why? Because there'll be good consequences. It will give us a competitive advantage over other banks because we will be the honest ones. Now, there's some problems with consequences, as you know. One problem is this. It leads to an ends justifies the means ethic. So this is Lance Armstrong. He won 7 Tour de France's. But then we found out he was cheating. He was doping. So he lost all his wins, lost all his awards, and that was a bad consequence. So that was a bad action, but only because he got caught. So if he didn't get caught, he would have kept his 7 wins, and that would have been a good consequence, and it would have been a good thing to cheat. There's another problem with using consequences, and it's this. The greatest good for, well, who? Who are we talking about? So dropping the atomic bomb in World War II, was that a good thing to do? Well, if you had asked the Allies, yes, it was. It was a good result. We ended the war earlier, lives were saved. You asked the Japanese, no, that was a bad thing to do because it had bad consequences for them. Civilians were killed. And this is a problem then for business, because what is good for the shareholder is not good for the client. What is good for the client is not good for the shareholder. You have competing interests. In sales, what is good for the buyer is not good for the seller, and what is good for the seller is not good for the buyer. So now you have competing interests. So consequences, yes, but for who? So then we have a third system of ethics where we say culture. It's all about culture. We have to create an ethical culture. It's in the vibe. That's what ethics is. And we see this in all levels of society. So in sports, the All Blacks have a winning culture. They have a culture of winning. Maybe in our families, we say we have to have a culture where we catch up for family dinners. Once a week, we have a culture where we eat together and there are no devices at the table. That's our family culture. In some societies, we have a culture of queuing up, because not all societies do that, but we have a culture where we queue up. In medicine, we have a culture of order, of hierarchy, of authority, and that makes everything work better. So as you know, this is the social contract theory of ethics. We can trace it back to Hobbes, where as a society, we meet, and by and large, we just, after a while, we nut out the rules. What is social convention? What is ethical for us as a society to create harmony, peace, and order? And in business and in corporations, we say we need to create an ethical culture. We need a culture of ethics in our business, in our corporation. Well, there are at least 2 problems with using culture alone to create ethics. One is this. What is in one decade is out the next decade. So this is not me. All I did was Google Asian haircut, and this is what I got. But that could have been me, because in high school, that was me. That was my haircut. And this is the problem with culture. What is right one decade will be wrong the next decade, and what is wrong one decade will be right the next decade. Culture changes, and what is right and wrong is constantly changing. There's a second problem, and it seems to, and it's this. It seems like every culture gradually just gravitates to the lowest common denominator. So this is the famous Stanford prison experiment, where they grabbed Stanford Ivy League students, and in a psychology experiment, they just randomly assigned half the group as prisoners, and half the group as guards. And within 2 or 3 days, there was abuse, there was torture, there was bullying, and they had to call the whole experiment off. You think, boy, but this was Harvard, Ivy League students. But yes, every culture, after a while, seems to, they just gravitate to their lowest common denominator. So there's a fourth system, which I like the best, and it's called character. It's the character theory of ethics. And here the understanding is this. It's not so much what to do that determines whether something's right or wrong, but it's this. It's who to be. What sort of person am I? That's the question we're trying to answer. And you might have heard me use this example before. Let's say Peter and I go hunting. We decide, hey, let's try it out. You and I aren't hunters. Let's give it a go. And we go hunting or shooting. And Peter decides, you know what? He doesn't like me. He wants to shoot me. He wants to kill me. So this is his chance to murder me. So he's pretending to aim at the target, but he shoots me instead, kills me. So the action, he shot a gun. The result, a dead me. In a court of law, they'll be ruled murder. Thank you. So he wanted to kill me, he killed me. Okay, now let's say he doesn't want to kill me, but he's just such a bad shot. He shoots me and kills me anyway. He was aiming at the target, but shoots me by mistake. So, action, he shot a gun, same result, a dead me, but in a court of law, manslaughter. Okay, now let's say he does want to kill me, but because he's such a bad shot, he just wounds me, and I've just got a little flesh wound that squirts a bit of blood. So, action, shot a gun, result, well, just a wounded me, I'm still living, but in a court of law, they'll be ruled attempted murder. So suddenly you realise it's not so much the action that determines whether something's right or wrong. It's not so much the result, it's the motive, it's the character, it's the heart that determines whether something's right or wrong. So it's who am I rather than what am I doing that determines whether something's ethical or not. So we all know this. So in a date situation, ladies, you're not checking out what the guy's wearing. Anyone can dress up just for the night. You're not checking out what he's ordering. You're checking out how he treats the waiter staff. You're looking at character, looking at heart. You're looking at motive, because that determines the ethics of an action. So what sort of character should we be? This is Tom Morris, and this is his book, If Aristotle Ran General Motors. And he said, according to Aristotle, the character we're looking for has these four virtues. We're looking for these four virtues: truth, goodness, beauty, and harmony. Who am I? I want to be true, I want to be good, I want to be beautiful, and I want to create harmony. That is my character. So as a doctor, why should I not take a pen from a sales rep? Because I will overprescribe, I will talk people into operations they don't need. So at that moment, I'm not being true as a doctor, I'm not being a good doctor. That's not beautiful medicine, that's ugly medicine, and that's not harmonious. I've actually disrupted the harmony between me, the doctor, and the patient, the client. Why, as a financial advisor, should you not talk someone into something that they don't need, but you need the commission? Because that would not be true, that would not be a good thing, that would not be beautiful, and that would not be harmonious. As a husband, why should I not flirt with a worker? Because I will not be true to my wife, I will not be a good husband, that would not be a beautiful thing to do, that would be an ugly thing to do, and it would not be harmonious. I will be disrupting the relationship, the shalom relationship between me and my wife. But even here we have a problem. Because how do we work out what is true, what is good, what is beautiful, what is harmonious? Because what is true for you might be false for me, what is good for you might be bad for me. What you see as beautiful, I might see as ugly, and what you think is harmonious, I might think as dysfunction. Well, as you've heard me mention before, this is what I call the Otto bin problem, because once a week I have to take out the Otto bin. I had to do it just last night, and every week I've decided, is it green bin or is it yellow bin? Is it green bin or is it yellow bin? And I live in a cul-de-sac, and we all do the same thing. We all wait and see what the other person puts out. And as I told you a few weeks ago, the guy across the street put out the green bin, so we all put out our green bins, and yes, it was yellow bin night. We all got it wrong. So we need an external reference point. Left to ourselves, we cannot know what is yellow, what is green, what is true, what is wrong. And that is where in the Christian worldview, we say there is an external reference point. There's a God who loves us. There's a God who made us. And more than that, he sent us his son, Jesus. And Jesus does this for us. He gives us commands to follow. So there's a code of ethics with Jesus. For example, he gives us this code of ethics. Do to others whatever you would like them to do to you. Jesus also gives us an example to follow. So this is the Bible's claim, Philippians 2. In our relationships with each other, we should have the same attitude that Jesus had. So there's an example of what's true, what's good, what's beautiful, what's harmonious. And finally, more than that, Galatians 5, Jesus puts his spirit in us so we can become ethical. We pick up the character of Jesus. The spirit produces this fruit in our lives: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Jesus' spirit changes us so we have the character of Jesus, so we become ethical. So what have we said today? How can we be ethical? We have four systems of ethics. We can have a code of ethics. We can look at consequences. We can look at culture. And we can have a character. I think all four are good. The top three are okay, but I think in the end it's all about character. And we want this in our character. We want truth, goodness, beauty, and harmony. And we have Jesus as our external reference point. He gives us commands to follow. He gives us an example to follow. But more importantly, his spirit is in us so we can be ethical. So I was watching Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, and there's this pivotal scene where Batman and Catwoman have to decide whether they're going to stay and save Gotham City, or they're just going to leave and abandon Gotham City and just save themselves. And up until now, Gotham City has not been very nice to Batman and Catwoman, so they don't owe Gotham City anything. So Catwoman says, well, I'm out of here. I'm not going to save Gotham City. I'm just going to look after myself. And Batman said to her, you are better than that. Batman was appealing to character ethics. You are better than that. Be ethical. And because you are because you have the right character, you would do the right thing. And as I've mentioned before, we can use character ethics in our parenting. Because this is what character ethics looks like in parenting. I'm your father. I love you. So you are my child. So now clean your room. So I love you. So this is your status. This is who you are. So now you do the right thing. But of course, we always get it around the wrong way. We say things like, clean your room. Why? So you be a good child. Why? So I will love you. So that's going the wrong way. That's performance-based. But instead, it should be this. I'm your father. I love you. You are my child. Now clean your room. Meaning, this is your status. This is who you are. You are loved. Now you will do the right thing. That's character ethics. And that's how we can do the right thing in our work, in our corporation, in our business. If we know we're loved by God our Father, if we know we're his children, then we will do the right thing. Because we know we're loved, our status is safe, we are secure, we are a child of God, so we'll do the right thing. But if we think it's performance-based, I have to do the right thing, and then I'll have status, and then I'll have security, and then I'll be somebody, and then I'll be loved, we actually, ironically, might find ourselves cutting corners and doing the wrong thing, looking for the love, assurance, and belonging that we're longing for. But as long as we remember, no, God loves me, I'm a child of God, I'm safe, I'm secure, and because of that, I will do the right thing.
Sam has asked whether I could read the question, so I will do that. So Sam, a very deep philosophical question first.
Okay.
But will you still love me if I still refuse to clean my room?
So that's a serious question? I guess so. I guess so. Well, that's what you are saying to your children. This is unconditional love. It's not performance-based. I love you. I'll forever be your father. Your behaviour will never change that status. So you'll always be secure. And then, you know, the behaviour will change. So who you are determines what you do. So that's a big theory going on here. And that's I think that's how the Bible plays it as well. Who you are will determine what you do. And I think even Aristotle says the same thing. Your essence, your nature determines your purpose, and your purpose determines your behaviour. And I guess, so yes, every now and then your child won't clean their room, but I think as long as they know their status is secure, the behaviour will change. So I don't know, you can push back on that if you want, but that's the premise, that's my theory, that's my argument.
All right, just speak to Andrew afterwards if you need to. Under a code of ethics theory, human nature seems to encourage doing the least amount possible. Why do some people seem to be much more focused on rules, keeping the rules, and enforcing the rules?
Yes, so the first half of the question is saying what the problem with code of ethics. And Jesus does the same thing. So in his Sermon on the Mount, he says, you guys have followed these laws, but your heart isn't following the intent of the law. And that's why, as you guys know, code of ethics have to get bigger and bigger and bigger, because you've got to cover each and every loophole that people come up with. So they always get bigger, they never get smaller. So why are people intent on following the laws? I think because there's just a narrow reductionist understanding of what it means to be good, that somehow by following the laws that will make me a good person, but it won't. And in fact, often it leads to the wrong character, the wrong motive. So that's the irony. Laws can actually make us become worse people, because now we're trying to see how little we can do or how much we can do before we get caught.
How do you distinguish the difference between morals and ethics?
I think from memory, okay, you can correct me if I'm wrong. So you have all your branches of philosophy. So you have metaphysics, and then you have ethics. Ethics is another branch of philosophy where you determine, you know, it's the whole idea of we describe things which that's your is, but then you have to describe things which are an ought. So that's how the whole ethics side of philosophy. And then under ethics, you have things like what are values, what are morals, things like that. So morals are more like, okay, how do I understand ethics? How do I understand behaviour? How do I understand the theories? So that's how I understand it. But I'm happy to be corrected.
I didn't ask the question, but can I add a follow-on question? I would have thought the morals is something to do with whether something is intrinsically perhaps right or not, whereas ethics is more of a framework, a structure. So am I on the right track there or not?
You could be, but just from memory, it's so funny. Like, I taught this stuff, I really did. And it was intro, chapter one, and it shows no one's paying attention to chapter one, not even the lecturer. You're just covering the definitions. And I remember covering this page one, lecture one, just the definitions. But I think just from memory, ethics is just the broad discipline. That's it. The broad discipline of philosophy, where we look at what ought to be rather than just what is. And morals, now you start looking at theories and behaviour and things like that.
Can a discussion of secular ethics be a means of steering people to Christianity? Mm. Is Kant a gateway to Christ's message?
I really, really do. I think if all we are is left with just atoms and molecules, and if we're just animals, and we're just another species of life on this planet, and there is no external reference point, there is no God, I think it's very hard to derive a good or an ought if all we have is each other. So I think they all steer us towards God, so not just Kant. So Kant says there are laws, there's a categorical imperative. What must that be? What must be what is universally true for everyone? And then he comes up with basically you just got to do to others as you want them to do to you. Don't treat people as a means, but treat them as an end. That's what he came up with. But you could ask Kant, where did you get that from? Like, that sounds like you got that from the Bible. Like, where does that come from? That's very question begging, very a priori thinking. So what I would want to say is, if all we have is laws, how can we work out what are good laws and bad laws if there's no good God as a reference point? If all we have is society, well, how can we work out what is good in society and what is bad in society. If all we have are consequences, how can we work out what are good consequences and bad consequences without a good God as a reference point? And all we have is character. Well, how can we work out what is truth, good, beauty and harmony without an external reference point? So I think all the systems in the end need an external reference point to determine what is a good law, what is good in society, what is a good consequence and what is a good character.
All right. Given the Christian belief in sin, isn't character ethic overly optimistic? Don't we need laws to force good conduct?
Yes. So, I guess in the end, I would argue the first three systems by themselves are not enough. They need character. But ironically, even character by itself is not enough because it's guilty of question begging. Because again, what is true? What is good? What is beauty? What is harmony? So you do still need an external reference point. And in the end, there is that dialectic between who we are and what we do, who we are and what we do. So I think codes of ethics can be helpful at this point. Again, remembering that they themselves need an external reference point. So I'll give you an example. If all we have is character ethics, and that's, you know, we're talking Stanley Hauerwas and all those guys. I remember doing an ethics course as a doctor where the lecture was very big on character. Like, it's not code, it's not laws, it's just character, it's who to be. And then you ask the question, okay, 14-year-old girl comes to you asking for contraception or an abortion, what would you do? And then you're asking her for guidance and she'll just say, that's the wrong question, it's all about who to be. And say, yes, but what do I do? You're asking the wrong question. It's about who to be. So I think the point is right. If all we have is character, after a while, it's guilty of question begging, and we do need a little bit of guidance every now and then, and that's where code of ethics would be helpful.
Okay. Are you saying that someone who has Jesus is a better person?
Not at all. So Jesus says, I have come to call not the righteous but sinners to repentance. It's not the healthy who need a doctor but the sick. So by and large, Jesus is calling the sick people, the broken people and the sinners to follow him. So most people follow Jesus are beginning way down this end of the bell curve. So they're already way behind in the race of what it means to be good. Also in Reformed theology, we believe in common grace, general revelation. Everyone is in the image of God. And so somehow in everyone, whether they believe in God or don't believe in God, will be goodness, truth and beauty. Jesus himself also said God sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. So somehow God blesses everyone, whether they believe him or not. And that's why we can find in everyone goodness, truth and beauty. C.S. Lewis, in his book Mere Christianity, spends a whole last chapter and appendix showing you how there's good, truth and beauty in all other traditions, cultures and religions. So in that sense, there will be goodness in all cultures, all traditions, all beliefs, regardless of whether you believe in Jesus or not. But what Jesus gives to a follower, I think, is the power to become better than who you are, because there's a supernatural element. It's not just commands to follow anymore. It's not just an example to follow. So it's not just you by yourself trying really hard to be a good person. But his spirit lives in you and you are born again. So now you have the supernatural help of Jesus with his character in you, where bit by bit you're a work in progress, but bit by bit the virtues of Jesus should come out in your life.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.